a show that inspired me when I was younger, and it was called American Choppers. They built these custom choppers on the Discovery Channel. I don't know if you remember the show. It was with Junior and Senior, a family, and it was like, it was chaotic. They were just yelling at each other most of the episode, but it was amazing seeing Junior just envision what it's going to look like and draw it out, but then custom fabricate it, weld it, and come out with these beautiful choppers. And I'm always inspired by these shows and about what you do and what others do about taking something and actually building it from a design or a drawing. But I feel like you're almost kind of born with it. Good working with your hands, good hand-eye coordination. What are some of those traits that you see that make people a good welder in the industry?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, from the basics of good eyesight all the way to grit, you know, it's just like learning to weld is a process. And sometimes that process is pretty strenuous mentally, emotionally, whatever, because like, hey, the person next door in the booth next door is getting it and I'm not. What's going on?
Any clue how important blue collar workers are? If we didn't have awesome blue collar workers, our lives would cease to exist. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Because let's face it, these are the backbone of our infrastructure. We'll talk about the skilled trades gap and uncover the countless benefits of pursuing a path in the trades. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. And now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades, this is Andrew Brown.
Our guest today is Matt Scott, a welding instructor at Portland Community College with over 30 years of experience. Matt's journey began in high school, leading him to work in a local fabrication shop, bridge work, and ultimately the piping industry. He has been training and testing welders for decades, with his students frequently returning to share their success stories. Whether you're a seasoned tradesperson, an aspiring welder, or simply intrigued by the skilled trades, you won't want to miss this episode. Get ready for an inspiring conversation with a true master of the welding trade. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
We had the opportunity to jump on a live LinkedIn Live last year, and it was streamed out to YouTube and other platforms about getting into the welding trade. And it was this amazing hour that we had truly inspiring people come and talk about the trades. I think we had a couple parents come in and people asking about women in the trades. And it was so inspiring to see all that activity. What were your feelings when we had that live last year?
It was amazing, simply amazing. You know, I think about it and the power of social media, getting the word out and spreading the word. You know, it's just incredible. And everybody's got their little niche in that kind of, you know, if you want to call it the market, right? But it's kind of like we all got that one mission, that one goal. It's like we need to get people in the trades. It's a viable option. You know, obviously there's money to be made. But to me, it's like, yeah, I'm making money. I'm loving it. But there's a lot of satisfaction. So when I was out working construction, you know, I'd go in at the beginning of the day. And at the end of the day, I'm walking out and I says, yeah, I ran that pipe that long. Or we did whatever it was on the job and we built something. So yeah, that was really exciting times for me, especially with some of the folks that came in and just were contributing. It was good. And, you know, getting to hang out with you and Joe Young, you know, hey, can't beat it.
Yeah. And having Joe on the live as well and his knowledge base and between both of you, it just, we kind of knocked it out of the park, I feel. And I feel we make an impact, you know, even all just three of us. And we're all kind of chipping away at this old adage about the skilled trades and how welding really is a great opportunity for somebody to get into. How have you seen the evolution over the last 30 years? Because you've seen it years prior. Is it more acceptable? Have you seen that kind of break over the last couple of decades? Is it getting better out there as far as people accepting kids getting into the welding trade?
Yeah, I think so. I think we still have challenges ahead, right? But the more we plug away and the more we talk with key people, especially like in the high school counselors and principals and teachers, I think the more it's becoming like, yeah, we can do this and we can become very successful. I just visited the high school that my son went to. It's about a mile and a half away from the campus where I work at Portland Community College, Rock Creek, right? I was out there visiting Coach K, the instructor. One of his students came in and he was graduated last year. And he was like, yep, I'm in my electrical apprenticeship and I'm starting to make money and college was not my path. And I'm just like, yes, you know, that's such a key that, you know, you got to go down a path and you don't know it's your path until you experience it. And we got to provide multiple paths for multiple people. I've had people with bachelor's degrees come in and, you know, one of the guys came in, bachelor's in English, and he was selling beer and wine at one of the local high-end grocery stores. And he's like, I want to get out. I want to build things. So he is now probably a third-year apprentice in the Plumber Steam Fitters in local 290 here. But it's amazing how just showing that opportunity, providing that pathway, there's satisfaction out there. There's a great career. There's money to be made. It's really kind of cool.
Are most of the kids that are coming in, do they come from blue-collar backgrounds? Are there family members that are in the trades or in the welding trade? Or there, no one's in the trade in their family and they're just coming in because they like working with their hands?
I think it's just a broad spectrum. Some of the folks, some of our students, yeah, they have parents that work, you know, in the trades. I have one student now, his name's Michael. His mom's a nurse. You know, she actually took care of grandpa when he was in the hospital. And his dad is an Intel engineer. And oh, by the way, when I first met Michael in the classroom, I'm looking at this kid going, I know you. You went to my wife's preschool. You know, so you got the professional parents and they're like, yes, you need to go and do what you want to do. So he's down there in the shop right now, you know, cutting plate, welding up a single V groove weld, ready to do bend tests, you know. I just think it's being embraced. I think, you know, this blue collar thing, it's like crazy because it used to be like, man, you're working, you're digging ditches, you're working, you're getting dirty, you're out there. But man, I think of the blue collar when I take my truck in to go get work done because I can't tune it up anymore. Man, I need the computer. I need the knowledge. I need the skill set that the technicians are like trained in. There's less like, I'll break more things than I fix, right? So it's like, I want it fixed right. So I'm willing to pay, which really means we're paying the working hands out there, you know, they're working their tools to do the job right. I get a little satisfaction out of that. You know, nobody really wants to pay their car bill, right? But, you know, we want to get to point A to point B, but it's necessary. It's needed. We hit the brakes. We need to stop, right? So, yeah, it's kind of cool to see. I think we're slowly chipping away. Like you say, you know, I think that the old adage of slow is smooth and smooth is fast. I think we're getting to that smooth part where the dam is going to break open and people are really going to see. I think about social media and I think about like some of the schools I follow and how they built their school base and bringing in quality instructors, bringing in, you know, teaching quality curriculum, the things that really matter, the hands-on, the practical applications. And they're busy. They get the word out. They're busy, you know, three shifts a day from 7 a.m. till 7 a.m., right? I mean, they're working. They're running three shifts a day, training welders. I think we're about ready to break open that dam and get some good built-in America action going again. I'm really excited about it.
I remember you sharing a story, I believe, about your son who I believe went to college. He ended up going and working, I guess, in a welding shop. And he was only, I think in the beginning, he was making about $12 an hour. And then he went to the shipyard. He was making about $21 an hour. And I think you also said that he's now a ship superintendent. And now making $30, $40 an hour. What time frame was that? So people understand, like, how long does that take to get to that level?
So Tanner started, you know, he graduated in 2010 from high school, Westview High. And then he was recruited to play baseball out at Campbellsville University. So he went to the heart of Kentucky. When you're a baseball player or college athlete, they tend to have you want to be busy during the summer. So he would come back and he'd play his summer baseball league in Portland. And it just wasn't conducive for like a steady job in the sense that his schedule was all over the place for playing games. So he went to welding school. So, you know, he started 2011 at PCC in the welding program in the summers. And when he graduated, it was right around 2015. And his first welding job in a job shop up north in Olympia, Washington. He worked up there for about 14 to 16 months, and he went, started at 12 and made it up to 14. And I was like, come on down, we can get you a good job in the yard. And sure enough, he came back down to Portland. He started in the shipyard thinking right at $21 an hour. And he's been steadily climbing, not only skill-wise. He started as a boilermaker, then he transitioned into the Plumber Steam Fitters Union. He was the welding manager for Complex Fab, and then he transitioned over to Marine. He's been running the ship superintendent to gig for probably 3-4 years now. He loves the busyness of it. He runs all the crafts, so when the ship comes on dry dock, he's running the carpenters, the laborers, the painters, the boilermakers, the pipe fitters, electricians. You know, he has all of that. He's making the company money. He's working hard, works a lot of hours. You know, there's some years that he'll make more than my wife and I, mom and I, right, together, because, you know, we've both been teaching for a while now. But, you know, he's putting in a lot of time, a lot of effort, and he's being rewarded for it. And he works for Vigor Industrial, which is, they have the largest dry dock on the West Coast here. And we're very involved with Vigor on the training side, too. Portland Community College has a weld shop right within the yard there, Building 10, and we're training welders. We got a full-fledged maritime program. That's part of this busyness I was talking about before the show, is it's like, it's so busy, but it's so good. We've got a lot of great things happening.
That makes a father proud. He's sort of following in your footsteps. Was there any pushback there from him that it sounds like obviously he wanted to be a major league baseball player or get into baseball? Were there any pushback about getting into the trades from him, or is it mostly just, yeah, I'll try it and see what happens?
It was actually him. It's like, I want to be a welder. When he went off to college, he was going to be a math teacher. So he started down that road, you know, went through all the calculus and did all of that. He was well on his way. But what happened is that he missed one class, and that class was not going to be offered till the following year. And he had a long distance relationship going with now his wife, Katie. It was just like, she was a basketball player for Linfield College University in Oregon. And he was out there in Campbellsville in Kentucky. And it was like, yeah, it's just time to come back home and start our life. And good thing, you know, because the side note, I got two grandkids right now, right? So I love it. But no, he came home. And I was actually, the pushback was probably for me, because I was like, now, are you sure you want to be a math teacher? Because to me, to teach math, you got to be given a lot of homework, and you got to be great giving that feedback and, you know, making progress that way. And I just like, wow, that's pretty laborious. You know, that's going to be a lot of hard work and a lot of detailedness to get that going. And he just decided that, you know, he hung up his cleats and he's like, I'm going to be a welder. And sure enough, he did. But interesting enough, you know, because, you know, he went off to college, and all of that mathematical training, man, that just teaches your mind, in a sense, that technical aspect of thinking and that higher level thinking, right? When it comes to building things, he's kind of like, I enjoy doing home projects with him, because he sits back, he looks at something, and you can just see the gears go. Nope, we're going to do it this way. And there's the logical flow of how to build something. Yeah. And we get the grandkids out there too. And we, you know, try to create that trade atmosphere at the young age.
I feel like your mind, you mentioned about doing projects at home. And I feel like certain people are driven in a certain way, like their mind works a certain way. They can see certain things a certain way. And I had this conversation about a couple podcasts ago about a show that inspired me when I was younger, and it was called American Choppers. They built these custom choppers on the Discovery Channel. I don't know if you remember the show. It was with Junior and Senior, a family, and it was like, it was chaotic. They were just yelling at each other most of the episode, but it was amazing seeing Junior just envision what it's going to look like and draw it out, but then custom fabricate it, weld it, and come out with these beautiful choppers. And I'm always inspired by these shows and about what you do and what others do about taking something and actually building it from a design or a drawing. But I feel like you're almost kind of born with it. Good working with your hands, good hand-eye coordination. What are some of those traits that you see that make people a good welder in the industry?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, from the basics of good eyesight all the way to grit, you know, it's just like learning to weld is a process. And sometimes that process is pretty strenuous, mentally, emotionally, whatever, because like, hey, the person next door and the booth next door is getting it and I'm not. What's going on? So it takes a process. But once you get it, and once you kind of go through those struggles and you start seeing how things flow, how things are put together, there is something that you can see it from the bystander stepping back in an individual going, yeah, they're starting to understand how to assemble something, how to take project A and B and put them together, building A and B separately, right? And having them made up perfectly. And there's these skill sets that is so like mentally challenging. I remember on a job one time, the first set of stairs I built, thank goodness I was with a master mechanic, a fitter in the structural steel side of things. And we built this set of stairs. We did the handrail. The handrail had to meet certain specifications. And I was the welder and he was the fitter. And I was able to kind of look and see how his mind processed and how he fit. And he checked and he double checked and used geometry. All these skill sets that are involved in welding, welding fabrication, building things that are incredible. And some of the things you learn along the way, just watching people, are incredible. I see it in my students where they're like, yep, they're getting it. You can see the thought process, how to, you know, not cut corners, but expedite processes by changing up the system a little bit and make it not only go faster, but be more accurate.
And how long is the whole process? So when you get into community college, how long is that whole program? And what kind of skill set do you come out with once you finish the program?
That is a great, great question. Because here at Portland Community College, we go from the standard associate degree where you'll take about 88 credits of welding. And that covers stick welding, MIG welding, TIG welding, flux core welding, fabrication, pipe, plate, all of that, right? You get your choice within 88 credits. And then you take your Gen Ed. And then after your Gen Ed, you are stamped and approved with an Associate of Applied Science from Portland Community College. But the key is that we've got these building blocks along the way. So I talked a little bit about our maritime program. We just set up 5 different career pathway short-term certificates, meaning 12-week or one-term certificates. And you go from maritime welding, maritime ship fitting and welding, gas metal arc pulse welding for aluminum applications, pipe welding, pipe fitting, and it's all maritime specific. We even got a career pathway where you bundle that all together, take some leadership / management courses, and then you can become that lead person on the job, the level 1s, 2s, and 3s at the yard or the ship superintendent. So we're starting to teach those leadership skills. You know, to answer your question in the sense that, you know, how long, you could come in for 12 weeks and you could get a set of base skill set. You could then parlay that into the next term. And maybe from welding and get your first welding certification, start ship fitting techniques or welding up inserts where you're cutting out, you know, a big hole in the side of the ship, right? So we'll simulate that down, shrinking it down for a 2-3 foot size hole. And then you've got to prep that metal and put ceramic tape on the backside, which is a backing. So you're welding it from one side and making a complete joint penetration weld. And yeah, it better be good in quality because, the vessel's going to go out into the sea, right? So it's just different stages. And if you struggle a little bit along the way, you can also get additional training. So we have access to, you know, different avenues, different alleyways, you might say, so you can continue your training to get up to speed. And then like with our maritime program, if the yard is doing a bunch of bridge work, you go through our program, we're going to test you to D1.5, which is the bridge welding code by American Welding Society. So then those students could literally walk across the street and be qualified, ready to start welding on bridges. Or if you're going to work on a seagoing vessel, maybe it's American Bureau of Shipping, an ABS test, or Lloyd's of London on the cruise ships, or whatever it may be. It's crazy. So yeah, we just kind of go step by step. You can get the whole meal deal as far as the associate degree or a 1-year certificate for maritime or a 1-year certificate in welding technology. But yeah. The exciting thing for me is that we're not only training these people, but they're actually getting jobs and good jobs, career jobs. Yeah, it could be a 2-year or a 1-term or a mixture thereof. So yeah, we're really trying to provide that avenue for our folks.
What are you seeing kids come out of straight out of school with a certification or two? You know, what's a starting salary? I mean, obviously, it's also based on location, where you're at. Let's say you're a shipbuilder. You're doing that type of work. where would you kind of fall? So people kind of get a good understanding with the amount of schooling that you have to do and then what you would see from a wage standpoint.
If we're talking our maritime program, you come in and you take our maritime welding, which is going to be a lot of flux core dual shield welding. And we're going to teach you how to carbon arc. We're going to teach you how to use the cutting torch. And we're going to be doing a lot of flux core welding. And at the end of that term, you have the opportunity to take the weld test. And then if you pass that, you could possibly go to work, or you could stay for the next term, which is more ship fitting techniques. But usually after two terms, and the beauty about our maritime program is it's in Building 10, it's on Vigor. And the guy that runs it, Todd Barnett, he's our key, the liaison there, because he has all of his level ones and twos come in and talk to our students. So they're not only getting the coaching from their future bosses, but the bosses are getting an eye on which students they want to hire. So then when they go through their training, the superintendents, the foremen and whatnot, they can identify where the students will be successful, get them employed, and start working on their skills on the job. And then, you know, they're starting at probably 25 to 30 an hour, depending upon their skill set. We just placed a gal three terms ago, as a fire watch. And they had a need for the fire watch. She had all of her certs. And they're like, yep, we'll put you as fire watch, $27 an hour. And then as soon as the opening comes up, meaning the next ship comes in, you're going to be welding. She jumped right in and, you know, she's off sailing down the road of work, right? She's being successful. So, you know, $25 to $30 an hour is a good starting point for our graduates. And it goes up, of course, depending upon what union you get into, non-union, you know, benefit package and all of that. There's different opportunities out there for types of work as well as wages, but it's a livable wage nowadays. I'm really excited about that.
That's a good starting point, because then you can move your way up. And from a wage standpoint, as you get more and more experience, look, everyone has to start somewhere. I do feel these days everybody wants it today and wants instant gratification. And it takes some time to learn the skills. Are you seeing a lot of mentorship on sort of the job site? Are you seeing that they're getting into the woman who you just mentioned? Is there a good amount of training that's being offered in mentorship? And are they sort of back to back with someone who's been on the job for 10, 20 years? Are you seeing a lot of that?
Yeah, that's the feedback I'm getting. There's a lot of training, a lot of mentorship out there. I think everybody understands that, hey, we need to grow this trade. The students going out are having a lot of success learning from the journey person out there, right? One of my favorite mentorship stories has to do with a guy. He's the president now of Diversified Marine. So they're another shipyard in Portland, and they build tugboats. And they've been building tugboats for the last three decades. But Frank took over as president, and he's like, I want to build a younger workforce. He and I talked back and forth on LinkedIn. He came out, he talked to the class, basically walked away with two of my students, Vaughn and Brad. The last time I was down at Diversified Marine, you know, it was all about, I guess, kind of regressing here a little bit. When Frank brought him on, he's like, hey, you know what? We're going to start you off as a laborer, and you're going to work as a laborer half the day. But then we're going to put you with a skilled craftsperson, and we're going to figure out where you land within the yard, and we're going to get you going that way. So he had that training, that mentorship program, and that was like pretty unique. I thought that's what I like, because, you know, you need to start somewhere, and getting that paycheck in your pocket and working and seeing the growth projection you could take is an amazing view for me. When he hired on, you know, Vaughn, for instance, he started just that labor, started working, welding, flux core. He kind of did the boilermaker job. He's welding up the ship hull, the bulkheads, the master butt seams, down working by the keel, welding up different components of the ship. And he did so well that he moved into piping. And then from piping, you know, that was kind of like, hey, gradual steps moving right up, right? Well, a couple months ago when I went down, they were just finishing up the Artemis, which was the tug that is up in Seattle now. I literally walked in and they were just like ready to launch to do sea trials. And here was Vaughn, you know, doing whatever it took to get that ship, that boat out to water. So he was cleaning up different things, wiping down things because the owner was coming in for the sea trials. So here's this industrial guy that's kind of peaked in the sense that, you know, he's that quality high craftsman welder. But if I need to wipe down the handrails and I need to shine up, I'm going to do it. It's about getting that product out the door, getting paid for, you know, and then the company grows. And because of that mentorship, I think, and that cultivates that. So you start off at the bottom and you just work right up. You get a full picture of what it takes to make a successful company. You know, so now when I talk to Frank, he's always talking like, yeah, Vaughn, he's a beast. It doesn't matter what the job is. He'll do it. He'll do it well. We can count on him to get it done.
You know, if he's wiping down the ship, he's not complaining. He's doing whatever is necessary to get the job done outside of just obviously the normal tasks and duties that he has. But that shows it's one thing to have the technical skill, but the soft skills as well, because you need to deal with people. You need to deal with managers. You need to deal with your colleagues and other people on the job site. Does that get taught in your training program? Obviously, there's the technical side, but what about the soft skills, working on a job site and, you know, just being respectful, showing up on time, don't have your cell phone out? Does that get spoken about in your program as well?
Yeah, we're always trying to work the soft skills aspect of it, you know. So for me, I teach the morning and I teach with Dave Williams and Zach Tuttle. And we always, on Mondays is our day to bring the group together. We got about anywhere from 30 to 40 students that are all working individually, but it's our time to bring them together. And that's kind of what we call our safety meeting. So we usually bring up some sort of safety component that we want to address, talk a little bit about a class meeting. We encourage our students to speak out. And then we have a big class cleanup, that type of stuff, right? So that's just one anecdote of what we do. But a lot of times we're talking about teamwork, collaboration with our students. I'm running up here today and one of my students is like, I need a stainless steel TIG weld T-joint demo. Can you give it to me? And I was like, no, but hey, Ryan, why don't you do it? And, you know, Ryan just jumped right in and was able to give the demo. So that collaboration, that cultivation, we really try to, you know, my philosophy is really push on that positive. Whatever good we can do, great. Let's push on that. Let's try to forget the negative, you know, as far as disciplinary action, all that. But we're trying to be so positive, and that's kind of really cultivated this amazing atmosphere where people want to come in and get things done and they're collaborating. And I just love walking into a booth when one student's looking over the shoulder of another and they're just kind of coaching them along. It's like, yes, that's kind of what we want. So the soft skills, yes. Of course, we offer different, you know, leadership type classes at the school. So if they wanted to take that as well, but it's a big component, I think. My wife and I ran a business for a long time. You know, we had 3 employees with us for over 15 years. It was great because they had that soft skills, that communication skills. It's like sometimes you got to address things that are hard, and how you address them is as important as them being addressed. It's just great to be able to work with people that, you know, kind of leave the drama at home and say, hey, we got an issue here. Let's work through it. And that's kind of an atmosphere we're trying to work on and get through to our folks in the morning.
Yeah, it's all about being a team player as well. Because you want to work in a team. You got to work together and you got to do whatever is necessary to get that piece of that done. And again, it might be sort of outside your realm, but you're a team player and you're going to be humble about it and you're going to get that done. And that's extremely important. I'm curious about your program and what you're seeing with women in the welding trade. Are you starting to see more women sort of come through? Because that percentage, I think, hovers 4% or 5% of really, that's all the percentages of women in the welding trade. Are you seeing that eke up a little bit? Are you seeing more women come through?
Yes. Yeah, we're probably in our morning class, we're probably hovering 10 to 15% women. I think it's about, you know, marketing, cultivation, and making everybody aware of the opportunities, right? But our school, especially over at our maritime program, we're recruiting women over there as well. And it is exciting to see the career opportunities that they're getting into. I think the industry, as far as, you know, it goes from everything from PPE, the simple things for more accommodating for women, to, you know, equipment around the ergonomics of things. I think that is attractive too. I think the skill and being able to showcase your skill is very attractive. And, you know, just kind of working as that team member. But I would like to think that we are on the increase with recruiting women in the trades. I love what I'm seeing in social media. You know, Courtney Chard and Jamie McMillan from Canada, man, they're just like, well, they're part of kick-ass careers up there, right? I mean, they founded that and they're doing amazing work up there. And then I think Danaya, who popped on to our last live stream we had, who is, one of the arc stars for AWS. And I think about Sarah Stork, a metal artist, and all these women out there showcasing the skill and just passion they have for the trades is amazing. I think we need more of that. And I think, you know, we got to recruit, train, and then we got to bring them in and we got to, you know, forge the way and make sure they fit within and make sure we're accommodating for everybody coming into the trade. There's so much work out there and we need all hands on deck. I love working with the women, and, you know, like Sarah Stork, you know, here we were in the pandemic and I'm opening up my textbook and I'm like, wow, she's on page like 274 of the textbook highlighted. And I've got her on Instagram right here. And I reach out to her and say, hey, would you pop into my online class? And oh, by the way, it's Portland time, 5 p.m. it starts on a Friday. Would you come in and just talk to my class? Because we're in the pandemic. We can't get in the shop. And she more than happily popped on. And then I was able to meet her at FabTech. And I'm just like, it's just nice to have that camaraderie. So yeah, I would love to see more women in the trades. Absolutely.
I mean, there are others out there like Barbie the Welder and Rhea Ripple, and there's a handful out there that are truly inspiring. And you mentioned Jamie McMillan, and somehow her name always pops up when I'm doing a podcast. And I've met her twice now. I spoke with her at a show in Las Vegas. We were on a panel together, and she did a keynote, and we got to meet each other, which was wonderful. And then I got to see her again a few months ago where we spoke at a technical school in New Jersey in front of 300 kids. She did the keynote and I spoke a little bit and then we toured the whole facility. It's just really inspiring what she's doing up there in Canada and what others are doing out there. I do think you're right. I think more so on social media and women feeling safe on the job site, because there's always that pushback that, oh, I don't want to be spoken down to. I don't want someone to say something. That too just has to change. It's nowhere near it was. I was also speaking to Demi Knight Clark as well about this. And she was expressing, you know, she's been in the welding trade for quite a while and she was talking about it as well. They're all doing great things in their own way to display. It's a viable career, like you said. You can make good money and you just got to keep learning and growing and putting yourself out there, but they're inspiring others and other women that you can do really well in the trades.
Yeah, it's really exciting to me. I grew up with four sisters and, you know, hearing some of their challenges, I was like, really? And they're like, oh yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to support. And the irony of it is that a couple of years ago, I was department chair for our program. And I was like, okay, we've got to get more women. I thought that thought. And here my buddy, Todd Barnett, teaching the maritime program, he's like, well, Matt, we've already done it. I got 50% of my class is women. I'm just like, amazing. This is what we want. And they're being successful, you know? I got this one student of mine, Whitney Pack. She's out there. She's a journey person iron worker now. And I'm like, I'm not brave enough to go up 300 feet and make that weld. You can though, man. Thank you type of thing. It's just like, it's amazing. And they're just carving their way in and they're working hard. It's absolutely love it. Chloe Hudson, the arc welding angel, she works for Joe Gibbs Racing. I want to go take TIG welding lessons from her. I mean, seriously, because she's like masterful. It's just like, what are your tricks? You know, for our industry to grow, we all need to play. We all need to share our information. You know, social media, the technical school, Bergen Technical Center, I'm on their advisory. Why? Because of social media. You know, I can zoom in. I popped onto their first advisory board meeting, and there's five or six people from AWS. Monica Fard, Joe. It's amazing. So we're all pushing to make it a better opportunities for folks, everybody. I think careers in the trade is just amazing opportunity. I don't think everybody needs to go to college. You know, I've got my son, obviously, we talked a little bit about, right? He's very happy with what he's doing. He ended up with an associate degree in welding, and then I strong-armed him into getting his associate transfer degree just because it was just like go change the classes around, put them in different categories and just process the paperwork, you know? He doesn't need that because he's a journey person, you know? He's gone through the trades, he's done his apprenticeship, and that's really what matters for that. And on the flip side of that, I've got my daughter. She's a third grade teacher, a master of teaching, master's degree in teaching, teaching in Kansas City, third grade, and she's just resigned that position and she's going to be moving to Philadelphia. And next fall, she already has her teaching job in Philadelphia. So it's like, everybody's a little bit different. We want to pursue that. But, you know, college is just not meant for everybody. For me, I love learning. And when I can go to a class and actually learn about something that I'm going to use and I'm going to work with my hands, that connective tissue, that's golden to me. And that's what means everything. And you know, I just can't speak enough. But on the other side, like my daughter, she just loves learning and anything and everything. And obviously, you know, master's in education, you know, you can't beat that. So we all have our own path. And I love what we're doing is the broader community in America and around the world about pushing the trades out.
Yeah, everybody's playing their part. And all the people that you mentioned, they're all playing their part in their role and helping impact sort of the industry. And everybody, like you said, has got their own path, whether it's a trades path or if you go to college and you go a different path, you need to find what's right for you because you can't force somebody to work with their hands who really don't want to work with their hands. It's not for everybody. I was just watching a video on TikTok about underwater welding. Do you know much about the underwater welding? Because they talk about the money that is made for that type of work, but I would imagine that's not for everybody to go deep down and dive and to weld underwater. It seems to be heavily lucrative.
I'm a flatland welder. You know, I want to keep my feet on the ground. Don't want to go up high. Don't want to go underwater, right? You know, I had a guest speaker in one of my classes during the pandemic who was an underwater welder. You know, he loved it. His career is great. And he was going all over the world, in essence, you know, and working hard. The camaraderie there when you're a diver, basically your life is reliant upon your tender person above taking care of you, right? So a lot of teamwork, a lot of long hours, and there's a lot of opportunity as far as, you know, making a lot of money. For me, I don't know much about it other than, you know, it's kind of steak out there. It's kind of cool. People do ask me about it. We have one of our instructors who actually went to dive school, but he decided to come back and be an instructor. So I was glad about that because he does a great job for us. I just don't know much about the underwater aspect.
I'm sure it's a smaller percentage of people in the trade who do that, which is probably why, like you said, it's to some degree, it's dangerous and you have to rely on the person above you. Sure, that's why it's lucrative, but I'm always fascinated when I see them go and they're welding underneath and there's fish around them and potential sharks around them. Not for me. I'm in agreement. I would stay on land as well, but some people, hey, that's their path and that's what they want to do. So what's next for you? What's coming down the pipeline for you with school or any projects coming up?
Wow. You know, crazy enough. Here I am, this kind of, I came up with the blue collar, right? I've been working the trades. I've been with Portland Community College for 30 years. So at this point, I could retire, but I'm not going to. I plan on working another 5 to 10 years here. Retirement decision will probably be driven by my grandkids, seeing what happens there. But, you know, we've got at PCC a brand new shop. We've got great equipment. We have hungry students coming in through the door, and they're just wanting more and more and more. When I was on my way up, I was telling the guys downstairs, hey, I'm heading up. Today felt like popcorn. It was just like popcorn. All the students were just going wild. And it was just like this energy flowing in the shop. You know, it was great. So I'm loving my job. You know, I do a little consulting work here and there. I'm doing some editing for the Canadian Welding Bureau, Americanizing some of their curriculum, loving that. You know, I'm going to stick with this teaching gig. I love it. And I love hearing feedback from the students. You know, nothing makes me smile more than when a student writes me a note and says, hey, last night, this kid I had a couple years ago, just before the pandemic graduated, he's like, yep, David Kimbrough. I just got into the Plumber Steam Fitters Union in Denver, Colorado, and is all smiles. And he's now on the highway to his career in training and education and working with skilled crafts folks. You know, he's going to have a lucrative, satisfying career out there. I see it. So that's the things that really excite me. I'll be sitting in the driver's seat, hopefully for a while, down in the weld shop, teaching welding.
You could feel and just see the passion in what you do and wanting your students to do well. You know, I constantly see you on LinkedIn and you're sharing either a success story or something about the trades or helping somewhere in the industry. And I enjoy people who are all about the trades and about making the trades a better place. And you're one of them and you're making an impact. We're all kind of doing our own thing, but you're certainly making an impact across the board. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much. Yeah. To me, it's so easy to brag about our students. You know, trying to push that narrative, I finally landed on the, I want to forge a new narrative and build America. You know, it's always used to be build America, but it's like, you know, we got to push this. We got to forge in something. You're heating something up and you're kind of pushing it into shaping it, right? And that's like, I think we have this opportunity and this vehicle of social media is pretty doggone cool. And most of the people I find, like, I followed you way before I got to meet you, Andrew. I was like, yeah, I love what you're doing because you're pushing that narrative. It's like, yeah, we need to get out there. And most people I have found that are working it, are trying to get the word out, are so welcoming. You know, I contacted Bob Moffitt. He's kind of like one of the founders of Weld.com. And I was in the pandemic and I'm like, hey, would you come in and talk? He's like, oh yeah, what do you want? He came in two different times on a Friday night. And he's like, oh, I'll take you out to the shop because they were working in the shop back then. And he was giving us demos. It's crazy. So just pushing the narrative and getting the good word out, I think, is a big part of what I'll be continuing to do for a while.
How do people find out about you, social media? What's the best way to see your profiles and what you're doing out there?
Yeah, for LinkedIn, it's Matt Scott, CWICWE, or Instagram, and that's PCC Welding RC. And that's the two platforms. That keeps me busy enough, I guess. So I'm out there. I like the LinkedIn because it's on the professional side in the sense that I'm meeting individuals such as yourself, meeting a lot of welding engineers and whatnot. The Instagram reaches more of the youth. So yeah, I'm just trying to push out that narrative. Good career, good opportunity, fulfilling. So yeah.
If you're not following Matt Scott, please do take a look on LinkedIn, take a look on Instagram and see what he's doing. He's making an impact. Matt, it's been great having you on the podcast today and I appreciate you coming on.
Man, thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you to our audience. And our message is to flip the script on the blue-collar skilled trades. We'll see you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast. Sure, nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue-collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.